Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. I am Parker McBride, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Matt Wasko. How are you today, Matt?
I'm good. I got my butt kicked this morning in Tabata, but I'm doing better now. I've had some time to recover.
We got some good Tabatas this morning. Matt's caught his breath now, so we're ready for the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bit of a disappointing week in local sports. We had our Kansas City Royals in the playoffs in the American League Divisional Series, and they unfortunately did not move on.
They did it. If you remember what we did in 2014, where we were like a wild card getting in, and then we just swept the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It was a crazy year. And then we missed winning the World Series by an Alex Gordon inside the park triple or home run or something like that. Just missed it. And then when we went the next year, we had to come from behind in every series to win, which was, again, exciting. So I was kind of hoping for those kind of moments again, where they would just pull it, and there was no lead someone could have in the 2015 Royals that the Royals wouldn't come back. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were like one of the most amazing teams that year, as it didn't, you could be up 6 runs, 8 runs, they would still come back. And that year of the playoffs was one of the most exciting sports years I can remember.
Yeah, they just didn't have the same magic this year.
No.
This is a good team, but there was just something a little bit different about that 2014-2015
team. Yeah, they were truly tested caliber. They had everything. You know, they had the starters, the relievers, they had the mental attitude, the never say die. I mean, the team was just made up to win a championship. And so I was kind of hoping maybe we'd see a spark of that this year. But I think game one, I guess there was a call that hurt them. I didn't get a chance to watch that game.
Me neither.
And then the game before the last game they lost, I guess there was a is a real tight game. I think we lost 6-5 or something like that. Mm. But I digress. You know, maybe next year will be the year.
We'll see. And our Kansas City Chiefs are a perfect 5-0 after a Monday night victory against the New Orleans Saints.
And we've picked 3 games, and I am 1-2.
Mm. Well, you can't lose this week because the Chiefs are on a bye week.
But so. I can add, because I picked them to go on a bye and not win.
All right, well, Matt's gonna get this one this week. So, anyway, Chiefs on a bye. We will take a look at their opponent next week on our podcast. And so we are going to jump into our fit focus. And I want to give some credit before we dive in to my mother.
Yes.
Who this morning sent me a link to an article from Epoch Health. And as soon as I opened it, I realized that this was the perfect article to cover on our fit focus today.
Absolutely. In fact, this might be one of the best ones we've
It might be. Done. Maybe we can finally put the great egg debate to bed.
Yeah.
So the title of the article here says, Harvard med student eats 720 eggs in 30 days. So upon first glance, that's obviously a very clickbait type of title. What? Some guy eats 720 eggs in 30 days?
Right.
So when we look down here at the article, we realize why he did it. And so 720 eggs equals out to about 24 eggs a day. And the reason he did this is he tested his blood before. Then he ate these 24 eggs a day for a month. Then he tested his blood after. And specifically looked at the change in his LDL cholesterol level. LDL cholesterol is the cholesterol that is known as the bad cholesterol, the one you want to be lower. And he found at the end of that month of eating 720 eggs, his LDL cholesterol dropped by 18% throughout that month.
That's unbelievable.
That is, not which is showing in his case, not only did the eggs not have a detrimental effect to his cholesterol levels, they actually improved them significantly in as short as 1 month. Eating an astounding amount of cholesterol, I think they said it was 133,000 milligrams of cholesterol in 1 month.
Wow.
But it lowered his cholesterol levels.
So, Parker, what did they attribute to that?
Well, this article doesn't say exactly why it happened in his case. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that this article does point out is we have, you know, experiments and studies that show certain things, and those are always using a large number of people. And the reason for that is because if you study a large number of people and then you kind of take the average, we're assuming that that's the average for the population, right? Maybe there's an outlier here or there, but this is the average for the population. But this guy obviously did this experiment just by himself.
Right.
He's the only one that did it. And we don't know, you know, we don't know anybody else that ate 720 eggs in a month and tested to compare it to. Which, that's one of the arguments that the scientific community makes to not trust stuff like this, right? You can't trust when somebody does a study on themselves or they report something that they have seen in their own data when it's just them by themselves, because it's not indicative of an entire population.
Well, I would say we've also learned that you cannot trust certain studies.
Exactly. I would agree.
Because they are usually set up to have a certain result.
Yeah.
And we have seen that come true as well. So, you know, science and I'd say science in general has taken a big hit in the last 4 years because of the pandemic and the supposed science behind masks and all this stuff. And I'm not trying to get into that, but we've started and what have we talked about for the last, you know, 30 some episodes on and off, and that is the dichotomy of, or I should say, the lack of nutrition education that our health industry has.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't know nutrition. And so their first choice is always to put them on a petroleum drug and not to solve problems with food. So I just read here in this study that you're sent to me, excuse my voice, that fewer than 12% of Americans are considered metabolically healthy.
That something is not working.
You know, when you have to take, and I know some people like this, when you have to take, by let's say the time you're 40 or 50 and you're on 6-7 pills a day, you need a pill to manage this, and they need a pill to manage what that pill causes, and so on and so forth, right? When you're on that many pills, and I know people that are on them in their 20s, you know, taking daily pills. When you're on pills and you're not solving these problems with food, you're solving with pills, you're not metabolically healthy, you know? You don't know. We were just talking about it before the show, the power of food, you know? And you said it earlier, you are what you eat. And I mean, I can speak from a personal standpoint. I had really bad knees in the early 2010s. I mean, knees that I had trouble going up steps. I had trouble when I got up from a chair. They just hurt all the time. And when I started doing a good resistance training with my legs, my knees never hurt anymore. You know, I could do things that I couldn't do 10 years ago. So, and I attribute it not just to the strength training, but to the foods that I put in my body, you know, the combination of both. So when you look at things like this, you know, and he's doing an experiment of what we consider, I consider eggs a superfood. I really do. Because all the nutrients that are in it, you know, it's not just the you know, the macro breakdown, but the all the nutrients, the vitamin D, the folic acid. So, you know, it's very important that, you know, this, I don't want people to downplay the fact this way they're calling this N1 science, right? This is a very important thing to understand. Is like, people want to downplay this, you know, because it's one guy. But I can tell you, and you know it, and I know it, we know what we have seen work in the gym, and we know what we have seen work with our meal plans. And they absolutely work. Almost 100% of the time.
Well, I do think it highlights a greater trend that is beginning to take place, and that is people taking their own health and fitness into their own hands.
Yes.
And that's kind of what this guy did here. He said, let me actually test this on myself. And that's what I talk about before, where I say, trust yourself. You know, try it yourself. See what the results are. Because some people may be different. It's very possible that another person might do the same thing, eat all these eggs for a month, and then their cholesterol might go up. It's possible. But now this guy knows for sure how it affects his body and his health.
Right.
And that's why I encourage people to do this. And the reason that I think it's a trend in the right direction is because of the education that is out there, or should I say the lack thereof. Because when you have studies and that's your only source of information, the media, the mainstream media and scientific studies, and the results say the same thing, then you believe them. And that's where our culture has been for the past few decades, right? The mainstream media says something, that's the only perspective out there, everyone just goes along with it. With the rise in social media and the ability for every person to put their opinion out there, we now have all of these opinions about the same topic that are all different. How do we know what to trust? The only way to know what's true and what to trust is to see for yourself, mm-hmm. and try it yourself. People are saying, I don't know, eggs are good, eggs are bad. I can't decide what's right because everyone's saying different things. Let me just test it for myself.
Right.
And nowadays, we have access to a lot of different technology that can make this easier. For instance, this guy, you know, got a blood test done. And I know there are ways where you can, you know, you can mail off. You can take his blood sample yourself, mail it off, and get blood tested. And then they'll send you the results. You know, so it's easier than ever to get something like a blood test done.
Right.
And be able to test this for yourself.
Yeah.
The question that I was going to ask that this article did not specify that I think is very important is, what was the quality of the eggs that he ate? Right? Did he just buy the junky, basic store-bought eggs? Or did he go have a local farmer that he got eggs from? Or how did he obtain his eggs? I would be really curious to know.
Well, either way, let's say he bought the store-bought eggs, which, you know, are deficient in nutrients, right? Well, that speaks very highly of the, you know, the fact that he just cleaned up his diet. But that even speaks even more how much more healthy he would have been if he would have gotten the farm fresh eggs.
That's true.
So either way, it's a win,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, one of the things that's going to be, you know, important going forward, you know, you were talking about people are starting to take power into their own hands. I think that's because we have talked about people are starting to see, because of social media and, or I should say alternative media, the health industry, the health of America is really bad. And now, for the first time in my lifetime, food is now a political talking point,
mm-hmm.
right? First time in my life that they're actually addressing food as a campaign topic and how bad our food is. Well, if I'm, like I said, if I'm a food manufacturer, I'm probably kind of like sending all my money to the Democrat Party. Because they want to keep us dumb and unhealthy, you know? And you know how hard it is to find good food.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine being able to go to the grocery store and actually buy. You don't have to worry about the things you're buying, right? Things are going to be packaged in glass versus plastic. You know, things are going to not be cooked in seed oils. You imagine a day like that, things are going, they're going to perish quicker. So then the distribution cycle is kind of going to have to be much more efficient. You're not going to probably get bananas here. I mean, not easily, because bananas don't grow around here. So, you know, that's the thing is, like, if you actually cleaned up the food, our grocery stores would be massively different, you know. And that's technically, we'd be way, way more healthy, right? And what would probably happen is the cost of food's going to go up because of the amount of preparation it takes. And so people start doing, you know, having their own gardens.
I will agree with the cost of food going up. But one thing I also wanted to say was this guy's diet was not all that expensive of a diet to eat.
No.
Because you think, wow, he's having 2 dozen eggs a day. Well, 2 dozen eggs a day, even if you're getting good eggs, is $10.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a lot of calories that he ate. And so, you know, you would still need some more food because that's what, probably about 1,600, well, 1,700 calories.
I think there's 5 grams of fat and 7 grams of protein.
It's typically 70 calories in an egg. So that's somewhere around 1,600, 1,700 calories in a day. So he'd need a little bit more probably to get up to where he needs to be. But generally speaking, this guy can eat 2 dozen eggs and get a large portion of his nutrition for a day.
Right.
For $10.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is an incredibly expensive way to live.
Well, I mean,
and if these were cheap eggs, it'd be, you know, the lower quality eggs would be even cheaper than that.
Well, that's the thing. If you can, a lot of people have trouble eating eggs. I shouldn't say a lot, but there's a decent people out there not egg fans. The problem is that you need to learn how to eat eggs because, one, they're a superfood. Two, they're very economical. Even at $6 a carton, they're still economical. Okay.
Yeah.
You're talking 50 cents an egg, and you just can't beat that for the nutrient and macro breakdown density.
No.
I mean, you see this guy's eating 720 eggs in a month, and he lowered his cholesterol 18%. Was it 18?
18%.
18%.
Yeah. In a month. So who knows if he would have kept doing this for 2, 3, 4 months, who knows what it would have done. But it did go down in a month.
I wonder if Dr. Sean Baker's seen this article yet.
I don't know, but it seems shocking, and it seems like a different result than everyone would expect. And not that I'm going to encourage this, but it would be interesting to see lots of different people try this same thing. And what is their percent or what is their result? Is this guy an outlier? Is he different than everybody else? Or are we going to find that this is a common trend among all people? And I think this is the new way to do studies, is we all get together and we decide that we're going to individually study this thing on ourselves, and then we can all report our results out and then everybody can view it. There's no bias.
Right.
If I did it, if you did it, if this guy did it, if we picked people from the gym, people, friends, family to do it, and then they all did it on their own, got their result, and then we compared all the results, then we could kind of basically do a study without even having the scientific community involved.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it also, the nature of the study also brought up the concept of N1 studying, you know, like you mentioned it a little bit earlier, where now we have the power to, because of our access to take a blood test in, and all the tools are available for us to do this for ourselves. You know, we don't need, studies are going to be great from the standpoint of getting a cross section, but, you know, again, you now have the power to do some of the things yourself. And you can even do it. You could even do a cross section in your own gym if you were able to orchestrate it.
Yeah. And I will say that in this case, the result is so much more meaningful, because one of the things that it talks about in this article is that there are a little bit more like financial barriers. You know, you'd have to pay for a couple blood tests and you'd have to, you know, buy all these eggs and stuff. But at the same time, once you get your result, it's so meaningful to you because now you know. Whereas if you read a study online, sure, it's free for you to read that study. But how do you really know how it applies to you personally?
Mm-hmm.
Because we both have had many different clients that we have trained through physical training and nutrition coaching. Not everybody's the exact same. Not everybody responds the exact same to everything.
Sure.
Sometimes, you know, we all have, or we both have a base prescription for people, right? We're going to work out this way. We're going to give them nutrition advice that's this. However, after a period of time, sometimes tweaking is needed for some of those people.
Yeah.
Little tweaks, right? Generally speaking, this is the direction you're going to go, right? Resistance training, compound movements, eating clean whole foods, meat, protein. That's the direction we go. But there are little tweaks that we need along the way. So not everybody is the same, and that's why it's really important to gather data yourself, like I always say, and come to your own conclusions about what's best for you.
Right.
Nobody can tell you better than you, even your doctor.
Well, I can tell you of that when we were having kids, I had a very naive view of the profession of the, or the medical profession. You know, my wife was pregnant. We'd go into the doctor, and I thought, you know, when we had some complications the first two kids, and then before that we had two miscarriages. And when I went to the doctor, you know, I hadn't been enough in my life because I was young and healthy, and I had a perception that they would know immediately. You know, wouldn't be any mystery after I go to the doctor. It doesn't work that way. It's like when you go to the doctor, it is a like every human being on the planet. Basically, the difference between you and a doctor is they have eliminated a lot of the trial and error that you would go through. But there's still trial and error. It's kind of like working on a car, right? When I hear a noise in the car, like with both of us just replaced some wheel bearings, right? When I started hearing that, I knew what it was because I've done enough working on cars with my dad. I knew that sound, okay? I know when my brakes are starting to touch the pad and they got the little piece of metal that's supposed to make the high-pitched noise when your brakes are getting low, right? I know that sound. I know the sounds of the power steering when the power steering's running low or starting to go out. I know that sound, right? But that's because of experience, and you do have to go through some trial and error even with that, right? Doctors the same way. It's being trained to, you know, to recognize those things and through trial and error to be able to. So training is kind of one of those things that it gives you a tool set to narrow things down more quickly. You know, we do that in the gym if someone's got a knee issue, right? We try to go through a process of elimination to try and determine exactly what's going on with the knee and what they can and cannot do. And, you know, I'm not saying we solve their problem. But the point is that doctors are just like everybody else, is that they have to go through a process of trial and error in some education they have to kind of fine-tune, you know, what's actually going on with you.
Yeah, I would agree. So, Matt, I had one final question that I've been thinking about while we've been talking about this, and I wanted to ask your opinion on it. So earlier you said you are what you eat.
Yeah.
And I had said that before the podcast, and I mostly agree. So what I've been trying to decide is if this guy kept going on this 720 eggs a month, how many months would it have taken before he turned into an egg?
Yeah, I don't know. But I bet he would be one healthy son of a gun. I mean, this story is somewhat indicative. I know that the fact your mom sent this, I'll be sending it off to a few of my clients. I have one client that has this picked up in particular. I sat down with them last week and went over their meal plan, and they were worried about the red meat I had on there. And, you know, there's the question, well, isn't red meat really bad for you? I've heard real, you know, it's like, I just looked at him and said, no, it's a lie. Don't believe it, you know. And she goes, well, I want to see the studies on that, you know. And so I have to provide them with some studies. But it's people have been so indoctrinated, you know, is that some of them are healthy. I told her, I said, if you ate red meat and red meat only, you'd be one of the healthiest people on the planet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just that it's one, it's pretty expensive to eat only red meat. But you know, and she's just like, I just can't imagine that's true. And I'm like, I'll send you the studies. Okay. This, you're going to have to trust me on this. And you know, here we go. I mean, if you were to tell a doctor, you can go on MD something. It's a major website online that people go for medical advice.
WebMD.
That's it. And you go on there right now and look up eggs, and they're going to say, don't eat too many eggs because of the cholesterol right now. Okay. So here you got when this person, well, that obviously didn't work for this N1. Okay. I promise you, for almost the entire population, that's not going to be a problem unless you have something that's deficient in your chemical breakdown or chemical makeup. So,
yep, very interesting article. I want to say thank you to my mother for passing that along and made a very, very good Fit Focus today.
Yes, it did. Thank you. What's your mom's name again?
Teresa.
Thank you, Teresa.
Okay, so we are going to get into our main topic of the day today. And today we're going to discuss a little bit about preparedness, but preparedness specifically from a health and fitness perspective. There always is, but none more than now. There are a lot of uncertain things going on in our world right now, and yeah, it never hurts to just make sure that you're prepared for some unknown things to take place. And of course, when a lot of people think of preparing for a catastrophic event, they think about stockpiling food and guns and water and all this stuff, and that's part of it, but we specifically want to look at it from how can you prepare for the unknown specifically related to your health and fitness and your nutrition.
Right.
So, where do you want to start on this, Matt?
Well, I think we need to kind of talk about what are some of the things you would face in a, let's say we lose power. Access to food is a problem. Violence on the streets. Maybe you have to leave your house. Maybe you need to go out in the wilderness. These are all things that are taxing on you, both mentally, physically, with your strength and your endurance. So what's it going to take with your fuel, your nutrition, to you know, survive this? And what's it going to take, what kind of shape should you be in?
Yeah, because the first thing I can think about is if we do lose the ability to have things like electricity or gasoline and some of those things, we're going to be doing a lot more stuff physically ourselves.
Yes.
We might have to walk more places or ride a bike or carry more things or do stuff the manual way. That's going to take a lot more physical ability than maybe we're used to having. And it's also going to burn more calories than we're used to burning.
Absolutely.
If we're having to do more things physically.
You know, building shelters, hiking, long distances, carrying heavy, you know, backpacks or dragging things. These are all things that are very possible. And, you know, if we went into, let's say we went into an apocalyptic, or how do you say that word?
Apocalyptic?
There we go. Apocalyptic. There we go. Scenario. You're going to find, you probably lose 60% of the population inside the first month.
If it gets bad enough, that's
yeah,
very possible.
I mean, just not so much from the just the nutritional side of things, because they would starve, but you know, just the physical strain it would put on them. I mean, people don't realize how bad it would be. You know, if you had to worry about defending your house, or you had to abandon your house to get away from the violence, or maybe your house got burned down or something like that, and you had to take your whole family out in the wilderness. If that family's not in shape, you know, it could be bad news.
Yeah. I wonder, how far do you think Running is one thing, but let's just take walking, for example. How far do you think you could walk without stopping?
That's a good question. So I'm going to refer back to we have a familiar acquaintance, Steve. So he started a program called Walking Across America. And this was 30 years ago he started this, and this was for a movement that he and a group were doing. They were doing it for the a pro-life movement. And they were walking across the country, and they would try to walk, I think, 30 miles a day.
Wow.
20 to 30 miles a day. And I meant, wow, that's a lot, you know. And so when you that and it takes a toll on you, right? And you and they would try to prepare for when they were going to start, and you end up losing weight. So I think, you know, I could probably walk the 20 or 30 miles, but here's the thing is, like, I know I have very high arches. And I would have to wear a very particular type of shoe because my feet arches would start to kill me after a while. So I'd probably have to wear, you know, special shoes to walk that far. You know, and I think because of the physical conditioning that I've done over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, I think it's something I could do. You know, it's how long will my feet last? You know?
Yeah.
You know, you think your legs might do fine, but your feet might start killing you.
Yeah.
You know? So these things all play into it, and I can't say my feet would last that long, you know? So then you talk about someone who is 50, 60, 70, 80 pounds overweight, and you want to know what it feels like to, you know, be, you know, severely overweight, go grab a couple 50-pound dumbbells and walk around with it for 20 minutes. Yeah. So.
Yeah, there's a very, very large portion of our population that probably doesn't even remember the last time they walked a mile.
Right.
Let alone 20 or 30.
Exactly.
And I could just see there being situations where you have to get somewhere and your only mode of transportation is your own 2 feet.
Exactly.
And so, you know, you're going to have that ability to do that.
Yeah.
And I've thought about it. Something I want to do, kind of along the same vein you're talking about, I want to pick a day where I have nothing going on and I can devote most of my day to something like walking. And I want to see if I can walk like a marathon distance, if I can walk the 26 miles
right
in a day. I definitely couldn't run it right now.
But no, I couldn't run it. I'm sure Amber could, but I couldn't.
Maybe. But because I think that could be really important, have that ability to walk all day. I remember on our honeymoon, we went to Utah to some national parks, and we did some hiking. And one of the days we did, I want to say it was a 12 or 14 mile hike, and then we also did a couple smaller ones. So I think that day we totaled like 16, 18 miles. And I was pretty tired after that day. It was a lot of elevation change up and down in the mountains. Now I was wearing like hiking boots, some very nice hiking boots that make it easier on your feet. You know, if I was having to do that in tennis shoes or something, my feet may not have made it the whole time.
Well, I know people that I train, and, you know, shout out to them, you know, the Pellis family. They go out once, maybe twice a year into the wilderness, and they do military operations in the military, like mock military operations. And they're going 3 days solid, no sleep. You know, you're working your military operations through the night, through the day, and obviously they're going against another organization as far as trying to take territory and stuff like that. And it's taxing. It's hard on your body to do that. And I know when James got back, his knee was messed up for it's been kind of giving him problems for 4 months now. He messed up his knee during that operation, you know, at night, can't see where you're walking sometimes. And, you know, even though you've got night night goggles on, you're usually looking up, and step quite wrong, you know, and you, his knee just got worn out. And then I know that they also went up into the mountains, like 10,000 feet, hike like 20, I think they hiked like 20, 23 miles. You know, some, I mean, the hiking 20, 23 miles, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And to do that in a day, you're moving. I mean, you are absolutely moving. And he lost 10 pounds, you know. So, you know, it's and you can see just by those examples, it's taxing, you know, very taxing. You have to be in very good shape endurance-wise. You have to have, they're carrying 70-pound backpacks. So you have to be in very good shape. If something like this were to go down.
Well, yeah, that's a good point you bring up about carrying the heavy backpack, because it's one thing to be able to walk just with your person, but if you're going somewhere and you need to take something with you, or you're doing that long of a trek, you're going to have to carry some water, maybe even some food with you as well. You're going to have to carry some weight.
Yeah.
You know, and the ability to walk, but also walk with weight.
Exactly.
And it could potentially be a lot of weight if you have to walk something pretty significant, or if you're having to, you know, carry a child or carry a person or something, or somebody's been injured and you need to get them to a place where they can get some care. You know, think about, you talked about walking around with 50-pound dumbbells. You know, when we will have people do farmers carries sometimes with their workouts, it's like 30 seconds max, maybe, that they're carrying them, and then they gotta, you know, then they put them down, and that's physically challenging, difficult. Could you imagine if you said, okay, you got to walk 10 miles with those things?
It would,
I'm not sure that even in a day I would make it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it makes you, you know, I mean, and just because of what's going on in the world, I've been thinking more about those things, you know. How to get to the where I need to be in case something, like, you know, goes down. And then some of it's not what we're talking about today, is like prepping and stuff like that. But, you know, we're talking it more just what kind of shape you need to be in. And as far as being in shape, I think me and you are probably ahead of the curve as far as what most people would be. So we would have that advantage. But I'd still say I would probably need a little more endurance than I'd like to have. It's different than, I haven't gone outside and practiced carrying 70-pound, you know, backpacks and walked, you know, 10 miles even with that. So I think, you know, we might be able, you know, just a little bit of training, that would be something we both could do. But, you know, then you have, you know, the other side of it is just being able to get the nutrition you need, you know, to, so, you know, I would say right now, it's like, as far as your fitness, you know, right now you have access to food, you have access to electricity, salt, meat, eggs. Get, do it now. You know, that's something you can do right now, is get yourself instead in the gym, get yourself mentally prepared, because the number hasn't changed that much. We're at, like we've mentioned, we're only around 30% of the population exercises, you know. So think about that for a second. That 70% that's left, how many of them survive? Not many.
Yeah. One of the things about training style that I think is important to point out, you talked about picking up 50-pound dumbbells and carrying them around, or thinking about how we work out. You know, we, and most anybody that works out, is very focused on symmetry, doing the same thing, being balanced, things like that. But I'm thinking about the importance of unbalanced training too. What if you walked around with one 50-pound dumbbell in one hand and nothing in the other hand? Right? How difficult would that be? It's more difficult. Or if you had to, you know, lift something on one side and not the other, that's also difficult too. And that's a little more realistic when it comes to what you would be facing in a situation like this. It's not going to be perfect. You're not picking up a barbell that's perfectly balanced and is easy to hold on to. Maybe you have to pick something up that's hard to hold on to. It takes more grip strength. Or you have to throw it over one shoulder and have it on one side and not the other. And the importance of figuring out how to incorporate some of that into your own training.
Right.
Sort of like if you've ever seen strongman type stuff, sort of like that, where they'll lift just really heavy everyday objects. Sometimes it's this boulder that's weirdly shapen and hard to hold on to, you know. But that's the type of stuff that you're more likely to face in this situation. You're not going to be in a gym lifting perfectly balanced weights.
Yeah, you're going to be, everything's going to be kind of awkward, you know.
Yeah.
It's much more easy to pick up 50-pound dumbbell than it is with something that's, I mean, these things don't weigh that much, like the table that we're sitting on or these boxes that we're using for our podcast. And they only weigh like maybe 10, 15 pounds, but they're kind of awkward.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get kind of a grip on them to pick them up. And it's not a problem, but I'd rather pick up the 50-pound dumbbell than pick these up.
Yeah.
Right?
Because try to carry this thing a couple miles.
Yeah. It's just big and awkward, and it's, you know, I have to stretch your arms, and it puts you in a weird position. There's no real easy way to balance them, mm-hmm. but they don't weigh that much.
Yeah.
But then giving you a 50-pound dumbbell, it's like I can probably
It's walk. Made to be easy to handle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or it's like a 50-pound bag of dog food,
mm-hmm.
right? It's kind of, you know, it's floppy. It's got to go over your shoulder. You know, it's not something you can grab, you know. So, you know, weight is not functional in the outside world.
Yeah, the other day I was adding some dirt to some places around my house, and I had bought the bags of dirt from Home Depot, and I had hauled them home, and I went to... I was in the driveway with them in the back of my truck, and I was carrying them around to the back of my house, backyard. And so I was just, they were 40 pounds a piece. And so I was like carrying them one by one. And I thought, you know what? Let's speed this process up a little bit. I'm just going to carry two at a time.
Yeah.
And so I grabbed two bags and threw them over my shoulder instead of just one and carried down to the back of the house. And boy, I was ready to put them down by the time I got the back of the house.
Yeah.
Two, you know, 80 pounds on one shoulder, you know, and you're walking around. And I was thinking to myself, man, that was challenging.
Yeah.
The one bag, right? I could do that for a while, but what if I needed to carry the 80 pounds? I couldn't carry that very far, and it
imagine if you had to carry a family member.
Exactly.
You know, because they couldn't walk anymore. And you probably would have to put them over your shoulder, because carrying them like this, your arms wouldn't go very long.
No.
You know,
unless you had really strong biceps.
Yeah.
Carry them out front.
You know, unless they weighed like 20 pounds.
Heck, even my 5-month-old son, he weighs like 15, 16 pounds, something like that. Sometimes I'm holding on to him for a while, and I'm thinking, man, my arms are getting tired.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you can, if you had to put them in it's not a hammock, but you make some type of
a wrap or something
that you can carry, that you drag them in some way where you're just pulling them behind you, you know, or if you carry them over your shoulder, you know, sometimes that's going to wear them out, their abdomen out, because they're like the bounce of your shoulder and everything. But mm-hmm. so you can see there's all kinds of complications. The way we live right now would dramatically change in a situation where we have global conflict, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, the United States suddenly collapses, you know, and that's where people don't, they probably can't even fathom what it would be like, you know. Did you see the movie, came out like last or maybe earlier this year, called Civil War?
No, I didn't.
Okay. That kind of brought home what it would be like, you know, where if you had a civil war in the United States and state against state, and you had certain states against other states, you know, that's what it was. That really kind of hit home with me when I watched that, you know, you have civilians, you know, they realize you're from the other side, so they just, you know, take you out. And how mentally strong you would have to be. And that would be my first concern for the majority of Americans. The majority of America is not mentally strong. I mean, they are very mentally weak. And so in those type of situations, I'm afraid that a vast majority of our population would just melt.
Well, one of the ways to strengthen yourself mentally is to challenge yourself physically.
Yes.
And so I think that's another really important step towards preparing yourself physically, would be doing some very challenging things in the gym. It doesn't matter what your level is. If lifting 100 pounds is challenging to you, or lifting 500 pounds is challenging to you, challenge yourself.
Yeah.
show your body what that's like. Give it a little shock of, oh man, like that was 100% effort. That was as hard as I could go. And it gets your body used to that, because if you're in a situation where you have to dig deep and give it 100% you got to lift something or get away from something, you got to be able to do it.
Right.
Like, sprint every now and again. You know, people don't sprint anymore. I remember when I was in high school playing sports, we would do our workouts. Sprints were always involved. We were having to sprint, it would seem like, every day. But now we don't sprint anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I told my wife the other day, I went out to do that. I didn't just like run, but I did some like sprint walks. You know, I'd sprint for, I don't know, you know, 100 yards and then mm-hmm. walk mm-hmm. 100 yards and then sprint. And I'm like, I never sprint anymore. I never am 100% exerting myself. If I had to run away from something really fast, I would be sprinting. But,
yeah.
You know, I haven't had to do that. I haven't had practice at that.
They say that sprinting is good for your testosterone.
Really?
Yeah. I heard that some time back, and that I think it was, it might have been, oh, it was, I don't think it was Dr. Sean Baker, it was someone else, but that doing short sprints is very good for your all kinds of aspects of your mental health, but one of them was testosterone. I thought that was interesting.
Well, I would say that having a high level of testosterone is pretty important in a situation like this. Yes. If you're a male, you know,
yeah,
you're going to need that. And what about people who are on testosterone replacement therapy?
Oh, man.
Right? What's going to happen if they can't get their testosterone?
Well, think that now that opens a whole nother door. You just cracked open a door there. Think about the majority of Americans that are on, you know, 5-6 pills a day.
Yeah, and if they can't get them.
You know, and they don't eat right to begin with. So, and then they're not going to have access to food. I mean, that is a recipe for mortality.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't eat right to begin with. You don't know how to eat right. And then the pills that were keeping you going, you don't have access to anymore. So now you're, you know, and then you throw in the stress of trying to survive. And the physical toll it takes on you, I mean, that's another statistic right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you'd lose, probably in the first month, you'd lose half the population.
Yeah. I would say if it got bad enough, that's very likely. You want to be one of those people that can make it through. Not out after the first week. Let's talk a little bit about the nutrition side now.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a couple different ways to look at this. There's number one, how should you prepare? How should you eat to prepare yourself? How should you eat now to prepare yourself for a situation like this? And then in a situation like this, how do you try to keep your nutrition as good as it can be? So first, I want to talk about how can you eat right now in order to prepare yourself. Well, first of all, you eat the same way that we always tell you to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to add in a little caveat, and that is eating things that you can find around you, right? Let's say that your diet is a lot of, say you're here, you live here around the Kansas City metro area, which is where we are. Mm-hmm. And you eat a lot of seafood and bananas and tropical fruits and
all things that aren't from around here.
All things that aren't from around here, right? In a situation where stuff gets bad, you know, there may not be the grocery shipments coming in every day to stock the grocery store with food from all around the world. So you may have to be a little more reliant on what you can find around you and what's around here locally. And that type of stuff is not around here. Seafood is not around here.
No.
There are no seas. We are possibly as far as you can get from a sea in the United States where we are here.
Yes.
And so just getting used to eating some foods that are around here a little more. One of the things that I think is a good habit to get into is eating some deer meat.
Yeah.
Learn to eat deer meat. There are deer all around us. And, you know, obviously if a situation came about where we couldn't get food, everyone would want to go hunt deer, right, for meat. But that's an animal that's right around us all the time. We're hitting them on the road all the time, see them in the fields all the time, and that you could eat and be very nutritious for you.
Yeah. So a couple of things, the process. One, you need a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, bow or some type of rifle is preferable to a handgun.
It's not as easy as people think.
No, it's not. You know, because they can smell you from a mile and a half away. Okay. They're very astute to your smell. But let's say you get the kill. So, Parker, you ever dressed down a deer before?
I have not. Uh-oh. Okay. I have never actually killed a deer.
Yeah. So, you need to go through it once to know how to do it,
exactly.
Or you're going to butcher the meat like you want to believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing is I seen my dad do it and, you know, you kind of need to know what you're doing a little bit. I mean, you know, you would, if you never knew Tachu and you started killing deer, you're going to be able to just through understanding what meat is, pull out the meat, but you're going to end up losing a lot of meat.
Yeah.
You know, and
you have to do it very quickly and efficiently.
Yes.
Especially if it's a little bit warm out.
Yes. So, you know, that's the thing is like, if probably be a good idea to, have someone, you know, show you how to dress down a deer, you know, and then how do you get it back? Because they're not light.
Yeah. And what do you do with it? You know, so that's another thing is.
Yeah. I mean, you pretty much have to eat it right there.
Yeah. If you don't have electricity or power.
Yeah.
Same thing with other small animals, you know, and just eating meat in general, because around here, let's say that supply chain breakdown takes place and the grocery stores are empty and it happens in January.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the summertime around here, you can grow fruits, you can grow green vegetables, you can grow root vegetables, you can grow a lot of produce.
Mm-hmm.
But in January, you're not growing anything.
Nope.
And so if you want to survive without the grocery stores in the winter months, you're going to have to eat meat of some kind.
Yeah.
And you have to find a source for some meat, kill some animals, cook the meat, something like that.
So do we forget cooking it and just eat it raw?
You could.
You might get to that point.
But I'm not sure. It really depends on the animal, because sometimes some of those game animals raw can be really tough and just hard to, it'll be hard to get much down.
Well, you know, and some of them, you know, I know that they might have some type of bacteria in them, and when we cook them, it cleans it out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you might be in a situation where you don't have access to a fire, or you forget it and you've killed this animal, and you know, and you don't have a way to preserve the meat very long.
Well, let's think about that then. What is a way to, how people can, because I'm thinking, obviously this is kind of like climbing a mountain if you're trying to be fully self-sustainable, but what are some small steps people can take? Think about cooking. When you do cook your meat, how do you cook it? Are you 100% reliant on like the power grid to cook? I think that's a really important question.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to cook something over a fire if you needed to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that could be a situation.
Yeah.
That could take place.
Yeah. I think, can't you like get cheesecloth, coat your meat with salt, and then it'll keep for a while?
Yeah. Now, I don't know a whole lot about that, but I do know there are preservation methods that don't require refrigeration or freezing for meat.
Right. And I know you'll see people do that with pork and maybe even red meat. I don't, you know, I'm sure deer would work similar because of the nature of what salt does for things. So, you know, that would be something you'd want to learn. There's some prepping books out there for nutrition, how to eat off the land, that are being sent out now that you can order. And they'd probably do me good because, you know, the only thing I know of is that I recognize poison ivy when I see it.
That's helpful. Yeah. That's very helpful.
Only because I've been very allergic to it during my life. But, you know, understanding, you know, the plants and the shrubbery that around you.
What you can and can't eat.
Right. Too. Can and can't eat. You know, what, you know, you can't just go out and pick up mushrooms and think they're all good for you.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Berries, too.
And so, you know, these are kind of things that, you know, plants have defense mechanisms to them. So you have to be real careful. So, as we talk about this, there's definitely sides of this that I'm not even prepared for.
Oh, me neither.
Yeah.
And nobody's perfectly prepared. But it's important to think about.
It is.
And it kind of make you think twice about how you structure your life, you know. And there are people out there who will, because I don't think, it is my goal one day to go for a year without being reliant on any outside food source. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it forever because I still will enjoy going out to eat every now and again, mm-hmm. or going to the grocery store, but I want to see if I can do it.
Yeah.
Can we feed ourselves for 1 year without any outside food source? Raise all our own meat, eggs, vegetables, fruits, whatever it may be.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because me and my wife have been talking about, you know, after our daughter graduates high school, moving out here. I don't want to live in the city. So she found a house, and I told her how I'd kind of like to live, and we want to have our own chickens and, you know, raise our own food. And, of course, that's going to be a challenge with her because she wants to befriend every animal we have. But, you know, the point is that to be able to raise your and eat your own food. And she found a house that is available out here, and, you know, she's starting to look at those things because, you know, we're probably a year or 2 years away from that, you know, get married through high school, you know, get the house kind of ready to prep for sale, all those kind of things. But those are things that we're thinking about, you know, as we get a little older, is that we want to be in a situation where not so reliant on a grocery store or, you know, getting food from a farmer's market, you know, where we got somewhat of a food source ourselves. I have no interest in growing a garden. Zero. Because I am a terrible green thumb, and so is my wife. So it will just be meat.
Sure, you wouldn't mind that too much.
Yeah.
Eggs and meat.
I don't eat greens anyway. You know, all I eat is you know, dairy and meat. So I'm not too concerned about that side of it. I used to think, I was like, oh, man, I don't think I could ever be in a farm because I'm not a good gardener, and I hate it, you know. But, you know, since I've learned so much, I'm like, I don't need it. You know, I don't need fruits and I don't need vegetables. I can live just on dairy and red meat and I'll be very healthy.
Yeah. That is one thing I think I would encourage everybody, though, is, you know, work with what you have. It is a very difficult endeavor to try to produce all your own food.
Yes.
But try a little bit. Try something. You know what? Maybe if you like eggs, try getting some chickens. If you certain vegetables, fruits, try growing those. You know, everybody pretty much has a backyard. And if you don't, sometimes I know I live in the city of Grain Valley and they have a community garden where it's this open plot of land that,
right.
You know, you can't, I don't know if you have to rent them or what, but you can rent plots or obtain plots where you can plant the food that you want to plant for the year. You know, try that out, growing some stuff yourself or raising some animals or something yourself with the space that you have.
Right.
You know, and eventually, like you said, if people are interested, they can plan towards getting out of town in the longer run, buying some property that has more land where they could do stuff like that. But by no means are you not able to just because you live in the city. most cities, even Lee Summit, they allow you to have chickens. It's just, I don't know, it's like six or something like that that you can have.
Right.
They let you have a few. That's enough to get eggs for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You can do it in Overland Park too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I just want to be a little more isolated, you know.
Yeah.
Which
I don't blame you there. I got the same ambitions.
Yeah. I want to be a little more isolated, you know, only because if I am, you know, I can defend, I think I could might be able to, if I have to only have to defend my property every once in a while, that's different than if I'm in, again, I'm speculating that if I'm in town where I might have to defend it constantly, you know, where the population is higher and the violence might be higher. So, that's my thought process.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot to think about when it comes to this situation. One of the things I was thinking about was, and one of the reasons why I think it's important to have a little bit of your own food source, is if we do get in a situation where grocery stores are largely empty, and it gets to a point where you can't just go in and buy whatever you want. But there is some available. You're going to see rationing, which we've seen that before. I believe, you know, during COVID, there was a lot of stores putting limits on what you could buy for the staples, foods and toiletries and stuff. And if you're in a situation like that where there's limits or there's rations or, you know, you're not allowed to buy certain things or there are not certain things available or you can only buy this certain thing, you know, that they say you can have your Cheerios and your Oreos, but that's all you can have. Well, some people are going to be fine with that, but it wouldn't be very easy for us to adjust if our only option for food from the grocery store was poor quality processed food.
Oof.
And I think in a situation like we're talking about, that would be that's very possible that something like that would happen.
Yeah.
And so if you can be a little more, you can have something to fall back on, right? Even if it's you've got chickens and you've got eggs and you can just be like this guy that ate 2 dozen eggs a day in order to avoid having to either go hungry or to have to eat foods you know are very poor for you.
Well, here's something you probably know well. What is the process to maintain a milking cow?
Maintain in what way?
Keep it alive. What do you feed it?
Well, you got to feed it. If it's a milking cow, you know, most milking cows, it depends on their production. A lot of people will obviously put them out on a pasture, on grass, and they'll do okay. But if you're really pushing a cow to produce lots of milk, a lot of times they're fed additional grain and additional nutrients to enhance that ability. Because a lot of times just on pasture, especially in the wintertime when there is no fresh, lush pasture, the milk production will be a lot lower. And so farmers will feed them some extra grains to enhance that production. So I'm sure you could. But the good thing about a cow with the way their digestive system is, cows can survive on grass. Right now in the wintertime around here, the grass doesn't grow. You got to have something to feed them. And a lot of people feed them hay, which is just you cut the grass in the summer, you bale it up into bales, and then it dries out, and then you bale it up into bales, and then you have it to feed through them throughout the winter. They can survive off that. Unlike a chicken can't survive off of grass. Their digestive systems are different. It would be kind of like if we ate grass. We can't survive off of grass. It's not going to sustain us.
Right.
And so cattle are going to be an easier animal to keep in a situation where if you can't obtain another feed source than just the grass that grows in a field.
Yeah. And how long can you get cow milk from a cow?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, like, starting at the beginning, when does a cow start actually milking in its lifespan?
After it has its first calf.
after it have its first calf. Okay.
Because that's what stimulates the milk production.
Okay.
Is if the cow gets pregnant and the cow births a calf, then it's going to start producing milk the same way a human would.
Right.
Right. Okay. A woman is that it doesn't have a child or has never been pregnant is not going to be producing milk.
Right. And so then you keep that going.
Mm-hmm.
And how long can you keep that going during its life?
If you tried, I'm not sure how long you could go. A lot of people will go for a few months, and then they'll dry them up, give them a little break, and rebreed them and start the process over again.
Okay. See, I don't even understand how that process works. Because I'm thinking, is it make sense to have a cow during, a conflict, and try to keep it alive? Is it too much work? Or is it easier just to have, chickens and eggs?
Well, here's my perspective on that. A milk cow is a lot of work. You have to milk the cow usually twice a day. So that's like morning and evening. So you're very tied down. However, if we ended up in a situation where things got really bad, what else are you going to have to do, right? You're not going to be going out to dinner, going to Chiefs games, if it got that bad, right? And so the time investment is not that big of a deal in a situation like this. And then secondly, milk from any animal and also cow's milk is extremely nutrient dense. And you could pretty well survive off of just cow's milk if that's all you had. And you could probably be very healthy if that was the majority of your diet. And you get a lot of milk off of a milk cow.
Yeah.
Like we're talking, multiple gallons a day.
Yeah, and you could probably only put down a gallon a day if that's all you had, right? Maybe 2 gallons? Mm-hmm.
Couple gallons probably if that's all you were. Yeah. But it's a lot easier said than done. It's not a basic or easy process to keep a milk cow.
And then, would you go ahead? Could you, if you knew what you're doing, slaughter your own cows and preserve the meat and all that?
You could. When my dad was growing up, I guess it would have been his grandparents and then his uncles. They had a farm, and they butchered their own beef themselves.
But they had refrigeration.
They did, yeah.
Yeah.
They had an old truck or something that was fitted with a... Might have been like an old... I can't remember exactly what my dad said before, but they had a container on the back of it that was fitted with a... where they could hang the meat and keep it cold before they got it cut up.
Yeah, so that would be the challenge is if you, where you don't have electricity, you're going to have to have different ways to preserve that meat.
You're going
to
do it in the wintertime. Yeah, so they always butchered in the wintertime because it's cold.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the advantage of living in Kansas or Missouri.
That's true. You don't have that everywhere.
No. You live over in the East or West Coast, that's a problem.
Yeah, you're never going to have that weather that's that way.
Yeah.
And the nutrition side of it and the producing your own food side of it is extremely location dependent, because the things that we can talk about this Midwestern area are going to be very different when you go somewhere else. I would say this is a whole different topic, but we want to talk about water, because water is very important too.
Oh my gosh.
Around here, your main worry is going to be filtration of the water, because there is an abundance of water.
Yeah.
But if you go to a place like the down south in Arizona, the deserts, Nevada, West Coast, water is a lot less plentiful over there.
Yeah. Well, you have those filtrations, handheld filtration things that you now can scoop the water and it'll like clean the water out no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. And then it gives you clean drinking water.
That's what they claim. I have a couple of those, like those Life Straws.
Okay.
But I've never actually tried one. I've never tried just like going down to a pond or a river or something and getting water out of it and filtering it and drinking it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that they say that would work. And I'm sure it makes it to where it's not going to kill you, but it may not be just perfect, pure drinking water. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I understand. That would be, but they, you know, they do those demos where they're going into muddy water and they scoop it up, and shake it out, and the other end comes out, you know, clean.
Yeah.
You know, and it's pure clean water, and it's like they had this thing where the truck drives through this muddy water, and then they scoop it out and outside the other side. I think it was some type of filtration process that was kind of long, and the other side that came out was this clear as day. So I'm like, I don't have any of that, but
yeah, getting clean water is going to be extremely important.
Yes,
especially because water is something that is provided to us as a utility most of the time. If you live in the city, your water source is just the city water plant.
Right.
You know, and if that city water plant is shut down or not functioning properly, you know, if they're unable to filter the water properly, it's kind of like when you have a boil notice.
Right.
You know, they ever have those when there's like a water line break or something. There'll be like a boil notice, and it's because the water's potentially contaminated. Well, you know, in a case like that, you may have to boil your water. That may be your source for clean water. So now my next question is, let's say that you don't have clean water. You can boil it, right? You could put it through a filtration system. So if you have a filtration system, you can use that. If you put it through if you boil it to purify it, how are you going to get heat, right? Does anybody have you'd have to heat it over a fire because
right.
Assuming, let's say you don't have electricity, you can't. If you have an electric stove, that's not going to work to boil the water. If you have a gas stove,
right.
if the gas is shut off, right? If you're out in the country where you have a propane tank, right? You could still operate your stove based on
propane tank. That would
yeah,
be
propane.
That would be fantastic to have if you had that.
That would be good because you could have a little bit on hand. However big your propane tank, you know, a few hundred gallons on hand, and you could still operate some of your basic stuff. But the ability to get and then filter water, very important. And a lot of people, before city water became the way to get water, it was all based off wells. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of times if you go out, if you do find properties that are out in the country, especially if they're older properties that have an older house on them or used to have a house on them, they'll have a well.
Yeah.
Because that's how they got their water.
How are those wells lined with, you know, when you have water that collects from rain or groundwater, how are those wells lined that keeps the water somewhat clean?
I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
You know, it pulls from way down in the ground.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of wells are drilled 60, 80, 100 feet deep.
Yeah.
Down into the ground, and that's where they're pulling from. And then there's a pump that pulls the water up to the surface. And a lot of times those are electric pumps, which in the case of no electricity would not be working, right? You'd have to have a manual pump.
Right.
Where you could manually pump the water up. And you'd probably run it through some sort of filtration system after that.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, you would have to develop some type of system to actually find those wells.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think... You know, the most important thing as far as our, you know, being, you know, you have to be able to, you got to be ready to swim, climb, walk, carry.
Swim is an interesting one.
Yeah.
We hadn't really talked about that.
Right.
I wonder, around here, there's not a ton of situations I could see where swimming would be critically important.
Well, if you're up at the water, you know, getting water, and suddenly you're in a dangerous situation, and maybe your only option is to get in the water and swim.
Could be.
Yeah. And if I don't, have you ever been in the water and saved someone who was on the verge of drowning?
I have not. No.
I've done that once, and they almost drowned you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do know of a story where a guy died of a situation like that. He was saving somebody from drowning, and he actually ended up being the one that drowned.
Yeah, because they're trying to climb on top of you from panic. And so they almost end up, and what I did was, it was my daughter. She jumped in the water and got too far from the boat, and she was having trouble getting to the boat. And so I took the life preserver, and I jumped in. What I should have done was thrown the life preserver out to her and just pulled her in. But I was kind of didn't think straight because it's my daughter. And I jumped in with a life preserver, and when I got to her, before I get the life preserver on her, she was climbing on me, not realizing she was pulling me under. Mm-hmm. And the water was really a lot of waves, a lot of white peak waves that day. And I was thinking, okay, I'm going to die here. So I put it on her and told her to wrap herself around there. And then I got away from her and then just drug her in. And because you got to have good swimming skills and good endurance to you know, swim a good distance, that's for sure.
Yeah, because, you know, we'll go down to the lake quite a bit and swim around, but it's almost always with a life preserver on, life jacket on, or some sort of flotation device, right, to help you stay afloat. And so it's, oh, whatever, it's just you're kind of relaxing in the water. But I wonder how long I could stay above water with no flotation assistance. Right? I've never just tried to tread water as long as I could.
Yeah.
You end up in a situation like that.
You ever tried holding your breath?
I have not.
Yeah. So I've used to do that. I think I was doing that with my kids last summer. And I think I got up to, I want to say 70 seconds or 80 seconds, where I'm just sitting there holding, but I'm about to pass out. And it's hard. It's hard to hold your breath that long. Usually you start feeling it after about 30 to 40 seconds. And then anything after that point is just willpower. To get from 40 seconds on to like hit a minute, you're like, it takes everything you got to, you're just like, you know. You know, the other thing to think about is, you know, the endurance it takes for self-defense. Let's say you get in a combat situation, you don't have a rifle or a, you know, and you just have to, maybe it's a knife or just your hands.
Like hand-to-hand combat.
Hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah. You know, how many of us are skilled in that?
Yeah. I'm not. I'm not. You know, if someone is skilled in, you know, jiu-jitsu or something like that, and, you know, and we're both fighting over some resource, you know, unless they're severely much weaker than me, you know, they might kick my butt. You know, because, you know, I'm not skilled in jiu-jitsu. But so these are all things that you'll have to compensate for, those different things that you know you're lacking in. You don't want to get in a situation where you're in hand-to-hand combat. So always make sure you have your weapon with you.
Yeah, there's a lot of important things to think about. And the main takeaway I want you guys to come away with from this podcast is to be thinking about specifically your health and fitness when it comes to your preparedness.
Yes, yes.
I think a lot of people, you know, they think about it, some people more than others, right? Some people are big time preppers. Some people, it may just cross their mind every now and again, but health and fitness is far and away the most important thing I think you can do to be prepared.
And you
prepared
can do that
for
now.
Anything.
And you can work on that now. That's the thing, is like, you know, get in the gym now and get yourself prepared. And here's the thing, we're in the gym because we feel better and we help fight off disease, and, you know, a stronger body makes you more efficient in the real world. Okay. We do that not even thinking about what's going, but because we do that, it's going to help us be ready for something like this. If we have a conflict in America where we lose all our daily resources that we take for granted. And if you have your health underneath you, you're going to have a much better chance of survival.
Well, it's kind of like you said earlier about the 30% of people that don't exercise and how they would be the first ones gone in a bad situation. You're not wrong.
No.
At all.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. And it really makes you think twice about, you know, trying to be in a physical condition and a health condition that is significantly above the average.
Yes. Yeah, significant. I mean, you need to be above average.
One more thing I want to ask you about that kind of just popped in my head that I think plays a factor here. What do you think about, and I know you don't really do any fasting, but
yeah,
fasting for purposes of training your body to go without food when it needs to?
Well, I like I said, I'm a big fan of it. But, you know, that's another thing you bring up from a personal standpoint. I would be in trouble because right now when I go without food, instant migraine. And I would have to, through process of, you know, going through the struggles, determine how I'm going to manage that situation. You know, I would probably have to have periods where I'm, you know, long periods of rest for my brain, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think doing if for everybody else, if you're doing, intermittent fasting, then it's going to help prepare you for what's going on. If we go into a conflict, what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I would say that not only being able to fast, but also being able to still function while you're fasted. And I think that's the most important thing, because it's one thing to just go without food for a couple days. But if you go without food for 2 or 3 days, how are you physically at that point?
Right.
What if you went without food for 2 or 3 days and then there's something very physically challenging that you need to do while you're fasted? Can you do it?
Right.
And that's one thing I think would be really beneficial for me to work on, would be fast for 3 or 4 days and then go do some very challenging physical activity to test my body through that. Say, hey, can my body do what it needs to do when we get to that point?
I think the moral of the outcome of this podcast would be, it's kind of made me aware of some of the things I need to be doing.
Yeah.
And hopefully people start thinking about those things and then not just thinking about it, but actually taking some steps towards being more prepared.
Yeah.
We can speak from the fitness standpoint side, you know, cause we know how the body works, what it needs and how to get stronger and how to have better endurance. Those are things we can talk about. As far as the actual, you know, prepping, you know, where you're, you know, how to utilize the land and, you know, that would not be something I would want you to take advice from me on. That's something I'm still learning myself.
Yeah. There's a lot to think about. Hopefully this episode served to just spark some ideas.
Yeah.
Right. And try some things and think about a little bit more what it would be like if something bad happened, whether it's a worldwide, nationwide, or even just in your own life. Right. Sometimes bad things can happen in your own life, and being prepared for the unknown and the crazy situations and how you can get your health and fitness in a way where you are prepared for whatever the world throws at you.
Yeah. That was a good episode.
Yep. Interesting things to think about. 37, right? 37th episode.
37. And today we're sporting our new hats.
Anytime Fitness hats
here at Anytime Fitness that we record on the floor every week. So, guys, we appreciate your time, and we've got some guests that are finally coming in over the next few weeks, and it's something we're going to be working harder on now that we're out of summer.
We've been teasing these guests, but we promise they're coming.
Yes, absolutely. All right, guys, you have a great week.
Yep, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next week.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.